Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, the men and women working in Virginia's public schools. VEA, teaching, learning, leading. Online at veanea.org.
I'm May Lily Lee. Thanks for joining us. 50 years ago, we were first introduced to miniskirts, peaceniks, listening to Bossa Nova without a glitch. Today on Virginia Conversations, we'll talk about words, including new ones added to our collective vernacular in 2012. Our guest is a world-renowned lexicographer and editor of numerous dictionaries. You may have heard her interviewed on Morning Edition, All Things Considered, Fresh Air, and Marketplace. We're very pleased to welcome to Virginia Conversations Virginia native Ann Suhanoff. Good to have you with us.
Good to be here.
What does it take to become a lexicographer?
Well, you have to be able to have a gift for the language. You don't have to be Shakespeare, because we don't want Shakespearean prose when we are defining words. We want someone who can use the language with grace, precision, and accuracy, and someone who can analyze sense development and get to the core meaning of words in a way that's the kind of reasoning that's almost always used by lawyers when they're building a case or trying to explain a case.
We were discussing the impact of being bilingual on using the English language, and you brought up your husband as an example.
That's right. My husband was born in Paris, France, and his first language was French, and his second language was Russian, and his third language is English, which he learned very quickly with the total immersion course upon being plopped into classrooms here as a little boy. It was either sink, swim, and speak, or else you were really in trouble. And he speaks English with a southern accent, and you would never know that it is his third language.
And as you've pointed out, he's as much of a stickler for the language as you are.
Yes, he is. Sometimes more so.
You got to tell him who's boss. What I'd like to start with you, Ann, is the new words that may gain entry into the dictionary.
Okay. I don't really have favorite words because as dictionary editors, we have to be very neutral. But some of what I would call my best choices as good candidates for entry in future dictionaries are just a few out of many that have come into the language during 2012. And the first one that comes to mind is reflective of the economy. And it is a plural noun right now, and it is credit invisibles. And credit invisibles are people, there are 64 million of them, who have been excluded from the mainstream financial system because of having no credit record, an incomplete credit record, or a tarnished credit record. They need to have good debt, or they need to have some sort of record, else they cannot get a loan. So they are caught between a rock and a hard place economically. Whether this word stays in the language or not is really strictly dependent on what happens to the U.S. economy and indeed the world economy. And the other one that I'm very interested in is brand new from 2012. The first citation I found for it was dated Christmas Eve 2012 in the Wall Street Journal. And it is a coinage of Robert D. Kaplan, who is a well-known global trend analyst and author. And the word is toxic nationalism. Now, many people might think that that's a self-explanatory compound. It is not. It's not like toxic marriage or toxic relationship where you can extrapolate from toxic and the following noun what is meant, such as a poisonous relationship. Toxic nationalism, as he defines it in his op-ed piece, is regressive exclusivist forces within countries such as Egypt right now, driven by racist, blood-tied, radicalized faith, sectarianism, and jingoistic nationalism, a phenomenon that, if it continues to spread, can and will threaten civil societies based on human rights and the rule of secular law. Already, this word has engendered a lot of controversy in the academic community, as you might imagine, and in the foreign policy halls. It will be interesting to see whether it lasts or not, whether it will be like Clash of Civilizations, which is not in dictionaries and probably won't get in, But if we continue to have nationalistic instability in developing countries worldwide, and not just in the Middle East, but perhaps in South America, and of course it's going on in Africa, this word could become a marker of what is going on in the world in the 21st century, and therefore will find entry in the dictionary. And then to get on to something that's a little bit lighter, there's a wonderful verb and noun, and it is humble brag. And this was new in 2011. It was popularized by a writer for the NBC series Parks and Recreation. But it has become even bigger in 2012. And it shows signs of staying power because it's a useful word. It really sharply identifies an aspect of what I call today's supercharged narcissism amongst people. And you know who they all are on Facebook, YouTube, and other places. And humble brag was featured in the New York Times not long ago. And it can be defined, I'll do the noun first. It's a wry remark, complaint, or self-deprecation that slyly and intentionally reveals just how important, rich, and famous you, the speaker, are. And I call it a self-deprecating boast. The New York Times made this comment, quote, "Outright bragging expects to be met with awe. But humble bragging wants to be met with awe and sympathy." And they go on to give an example of humble bragging by a humble bragger. And that person happens to be Ari Fleischer, and we all know that he was George W. Bush's press secretary. He posted this tweet on Twitter, and this is what the Times is quoting. "They just announced my flight at LaGuardia is number 15 for takeoff. I miss Air Force One." Poor baby. So he wants to be a poor baby. That's what happens when you humble brag, and I'm sure you have heard people do it many, many times. And then finally, the other one that I there's a pair here that I really think is quite signal. Again, they are not exactly coinages from 2012 per se, but they have staying power, and I keep seeing them again and again. The first one is a verb, crowdfund, and so I'll define it as crowdfunding here in the gerund sense. It's the collective effort of people who network and pool their money via the internet or on social media to support efforts initiated by other people or organizations. For example, supporting political campaigns, we've seen that, investing in entrepreneurial startups, underwriting scientific or medical research. Now, although this goes back to 1997, when some people here in the States raised about $60,000 by crowdfunding a British rock band's tour to the States. Although it goes all the way back then, it has become more important now with the Jobs Act because regulators are watching to ensure that private companies, small private entrepreneurial companies, are not selling shares of their business to investors who are not wealthy. And so that shows you exactly how important a word can be as a marker of what is going on in society. Another crowd-related word, and all of these, by the way, are based on such things as crowd surfing and crowd pleasing. This one now has taken on two senses, which is an indicator immediately when we have what we call metastasis, which is sense development, just like cell development is called metastasis. We have a computer science sense of crowdsourcing, and then we have one that's general. And crowdsourcing is the process of outsourcing multiple tasks online or offline to a distributed group of people. And a good example of that is that Google Maps has crowdsourced North Korea. And yesterday in the Wall Street Journal was an article about how how Google had crowdsourced North Korea so that people will be aware of where the gulags are, where the military installations are, where the subways are, where the cities are. And at the same time, working separately, another group of people out of Johns Hopkins University have been doing the same thing, using defectors from North Korea and other people who are familiar with the topography of that closed country. So this gives you an idea of how computer science has now morphed into political science and into geography and into the general parlance. And finally, there's the second sense, which I think is very funny. It's the act or process of soliciting money from your friends, family, and acquaintances in order to buy a big-ticket item that you couldn't afford ordinarily. And a site from the New York Times on January 13th of this year quotes an anonymous person from Brooklyn bemoaning the fact that, quote, a young friend asked me to crowdsource his lifelong dream of a Steinway grand piano. And the person was obviously a little bit miffed at being crowdsourced. So those, I think, are indicative of the types of things that we're watching. And those are what we call trial definitions because the words can change daily and sometimes hourly.
Before we take our first caller, I'd like to go over that fun four-letter word, YOLO.
Ah, yes. That word almost won Word of the Year in a contest that the American Dialect Society ran, and hashtag was the winner, but YOLO was a very close second. It's an acronym, and it goes back to rapper Drake, whose song The Motto has the line, "You only live once." That's the motto, YOLO. And this burst onto the linguistic landscape in 2012, and it's a good example of how social media such as YouTube can propel a word into the language. It was even used in The New Yorker in a cartoon recently showing the Grim Reaper knocking at a person's door, and instead of saying hello, he says YOLO, and it means you only live once. It can be used as a verb, and what it means as far as a verb is concerned, is living dangerously because you only have one life to live. So a citation that I found recently online said, quote, after a night of YOLOing, I needed to chill out and sober up. And it can also be used as an interjection to express justification for doing something absolutely crazy, like buying a pair of Jimmy Choo shoes that you spend $900 for. And you can say, should I buy these shoes? YOLO. And finally, Katie Couric has really driven it into the parlance because she's using it as a noun, as a segment on her show. And the segment is titled, What's Your YOLO? And what that means is, what's the one thing that you really would like to do if you only have one life to live?
We have on the line a special guest. You might remember the movie Good Morning Vietnam. The DJ was based on this person, Adrian Kronauer. Is that right? Did I pronounce that correctly?
Perfectly.
Great to have you on this morning.
Happy to be here. And
listen to that voice. It's so mellifluous.
Pardon?
Your voice is so mellifluous.
Thank you. You were talking about acronyms, and I was going to point out that I spent the last 8 years before I retired here to Southwest Virginia working at the Pentagon, and the military loves acronyms. And sometimes they are very context-specific in that, for example, my whole life has been in broadcasting, so SOF has always meant sound on film to me. Uh-uh. In the Pentagon, it's Special Operations Forces.
Oh, very important to know. And there used to be a dictionary, I don't know whether it's still out, was published by the Department of Defense, which was available at one point for all of us geeks in the dictionary world, and it was strictly Department of Defense acronyms.
Mm-hmm. And there are plenty of them, and even within various departments of the Pentagon as well. But I am concerned not so much with the neologisms as with the mispronunciation, or what I in my 70s think of as mispronunciation, of various words that I've known all my life. For example, the letter L is being more and more dropped from the word vulnerable, and you get the pronunciation of vulnerable. The verb effect, and Maylili, you did it this morning, the noun and the verb effect and affect seem to have been written out of the language in favor of the word impact, used as either a verb or a noun. And the month that starts today is almost always pronounced as though it were February instead of the correct February. And some people, like Susan Stamberg and the late Walter Cronkite, just wallowed in doing what they knew was wrong and excusing it by saying that, well, pronouncing it correctly is just too hard. And I submit that anybody who can walk into a tap room and order a brew can say the name of the second month properly. And finally, I've been noticing more and more people are saying, instead of Halloween, they are saying Halloween, as though it were talking about something that was devoid of content in the middle of it.
As far as Halloween are concerned, I think some people say the second variant because they're thinking of All Hallows Eve.
And which is Hallows,
but
really.
It's Hallows here, but in Britain, quite often, it's pronounced the other way. So they may have a slight influence there from British English, but I do agree with you. I've noticed that. And a lot of the pronunciations that you discussed are covered in various dictionaries. I know that when I was the executive editor of the American Heritage Dictionary, we did deal with mispronunciations and pronunciation variants in notes, and also other dictionaries that I've worked on since then. I have some pet peeves that I'd like to add to yours, because your list was really, really good. I wonder if you've noticed that there is a particular anchor man on one of the major channels, and I'm not going to mention who it is, who cannot get through his head that council, C-O-U-N-S-E-L, and C-O-U-N-C-I-L, are not pronounced consul, C-O-N-S-U-L.
As in the Roman consul.
That's right, and you probably will find out who that is if you snoop around with your ears a little bit on the cable channels. Then there's another anchor woman on yet another national channel who insists on saying gist instead of just.
Oh, that's a very wide one.
Very
especially
intrusive.
Especially in commercials.
Keep going. And I actually heard a national correspondent pronounce corrigidor, corridor. And I'm wondering if maybe that person actually was reading off of a teleprompter, and perhaps the person who had written the script had misspelled corrigidor as corridor. And finally, the big bugaboo, insurance as opposed to insurance. No doubt you've heard that.
There are a lot of words where the accent is put on the first syllable instead of the second syllable, which is the preferred pronunciation.
Well, thank you so much, Adrian Krauenauer. Appreciate your
calling in
this morning. Thank you. And you are listening to Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio. We'll continue talking words in a moment. Next week, the 2013 session of the General Assembly passes the halfway point. We'll have that next time. But stay with us. We're back in a minute. We are back, and joining us is Anne Sukhanoff, and we are delighted to have your calls and input this hour as we discuss some of the new words and also word usage. Adrian brought up an interesting point about a word I used, and of course I just talked with Anne about it because I consider myself somewhat of a grammar freak. So we discussed the use of the word impact, and it is something that is still considered okay in certain camps. This is where we get into interesting territory.
Yes, this is where you get into prescriptivism versus descriptivism. And years ago, the American Heritage Dictionary really, really stigmatized the verb impact and the verb contact as well. Nowadays, because of huge amounts of usage of both of these terms by educated native English speakers and writers over the long term and in reputable publications, this particular usage that you find in your idiolect is considered perfectly okay. And this is just a good example of how language can change overnight and sometimes over the long term. And I can give you a good example of something that I'm looking at as far as usage is concerned. It's something that is evolving right under our eyes. It's the word including. And it's a preposition now. It used to not be entered in dictionaries. And what it means is, quote unquote, in dictionary language, used to introduce examples of people or things forming part of a particular group. And an example is, it'll cost you $65, including sales tax. Well, nobody thinks a thing about that now, but it was not used like this years ago, and it wasn't entered in dictionaries. Now it has also evolved into a conjunction, which means as well as. And here's an example. We put this in the Encarta Webster's Dictionary. Discussion of the market analysts, including whether it was skewed in favor of launching the project, went on for an hour. And you can substitute as well as in that particular sentence instead of including. But now we're seeing including used as a conjunction followed by a preposition. And this is something that dictionary editors are going to have to deal with as far as usage is concerned. Here's an example that was taken from a major network. The government approved lithium ion batteries, including four airliners in 2013. And a second one from CNN. He had been selling all sorts of secrets, including to the Iranians. And I'm not sure whether I like that particular construction or not. I think it sounds sloppy, and I'd be interested to hear comments from anybody else about this little bit of lexical minutia.
We have maybe not a reaction to that word, but Bridget from Charlottesville does have a call. Go ahead, Bridget.
Yes, good morning. I'm actually calling about a normal daily conversation that seems to be changing quickly. And one of the ways I've become aware of this is I have a number of close lifelong friends who are not native English speakers who went to university in the United States and learned to speak English properly. And they're always pointing out to me that they are shocked when they hear the way that language is changing. And, for example, the example that I gave to the man on the telephone is the changing of the pronunciation of experiment to experiment, which you hear quite often on the radio and on television. Also, the use of may instead of might.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
We actually talked about that one. Let's take, first of all, do you say experiment?
There's one other thing that really irritates them, and that is saying, instead of saying, I am making something, I'm doing something. Or instead of saying, I'm going to lunch, I'm doing lunch.
Okay. Let's start with experiment, and she says experiment is what she's heard.
You say experiment or experiment?
I hear people say experiment all the time, and I have to correct my own children.
I hear it, too, and I hate to tell you, but I think it's going to become an accepted variant. Lots of times, whether we like it or not, pronunciations that are not wrong, but simply are just a variation on the pronunciation of a vowel sound, for example, actually get into the language. And depending on what part of the country a person's from, they're going to stay as variants. I'm not sure about that one. It never has bothered me, probably because I've heard so many people say it that it's become white noise to me.
What about may and might?
Give me an example of what you speak of.
Well, especially in print journalism, and it seems to be something that's become accepted there because they use, you know, fewer characters. But you'll look at a headline where in proper English, Congress might do such and such. Instead, it's Congress may do such and such.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Yeah. And headline language is something that we completely ignore in dictionary land. That's something that probably no one realizes, because We do not consider headline language to be idiomatic English necessarily because of the impact that's being sought by the headline writer and also the restrictions on space. And also, sometimes they have to be careful about getting a double meaning in things. And so that doesn't bother me, but I agree that the full sentence that you used certainly does.
It does seem to be filtering down. I'm not going to take any more of your time, but I want to mention a couple of other things. The habit now of using the word doing as a verb that encompasses all kinds of other verbs that are probably more appropriate, but also dropping prepositions. I've also noticed that it's become very common, instead of saying someone graduated from high school or graduated from college, they now graduate high school and graduate college. So those are just a couple of more examples, and I will take the rest of your comments offline.
Thanks, Bridget.
Thank you.
I'd like to comment on this graduate verb. We consider that in conservative dictionary land as an illiteracy. He graduated high school. He graduated college. I'm glad you brought that up. That's a really bad one.
You see that a lot.
And you see it more and more often now. And the other thing, the other one you mentioned about doing lunch, that one actually got started, I believe, in New York City. And it was considered to be a very socially acceptable thing to say and sort of fancy. And so it's in the dictionaries. Let's do lunch. Ladies who do lunch.
All right. Well, there you have it, Bridget. All right. Let's try Megan from Norfolk. Did I get that right? Is it Megan or Megan?
Megan.
Hello.
Hello. I really have sort of two pet peeves, and I guess you hear it a lot on the radio, and that's the use of the verb working when referencing car accidents, that car accidents are working in a particular location, which, of course, they cannot do. So and the second one is the loss of the adverb in our language. Everybody is using adjectives to qualify verbs, and you even see it in writing sometimes, and it's just really bizarre to me that we can't use an adverb anymore.
Can you give us an example of an adjective?
I really was trying to think of that as I was, I'm actually on the road driving, but as I was thinking, it really is, it couldn't come to me.
Anne has one.
But you'll notice it. Oh, you have one?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, I do. Used by a mayor of a city not far from here and also by a national anchor in the locution, what would we do different?
Yes.
And it should be differently. They seem to think that the word that they're using modifies what? They don't realize that it's modifying the verb do. The mayor said, there are parts I'd do different. And
yep.
And I'm so glad you brought that up because it's very, very sloppy, and it indicates that the person doesn't know grammar very well. Now, as far as working is concerned, I'm familiar with the police expression and the VDOT expression, we're working the accident on I-95, hoping to open the lanes. I don't know whether that's exactly what you have in mind.
Well, what I see is that they don't add the we. They'll just say there's a car accident working.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And so they just leave the reference to a person or some individual who can actually do the work.
Right. It's just language shorthand. And
yep.
And again, it's pretty sloppy.
Megan, thanks so much for your call. Tiffany from Chesapeake, go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning, ladies. Thank you for allowing me to join the show this morning. I just have two quick statements that I would like to make. My first statement is, I just wanted clarity on the word irregardless.
Yes, there is no word irregardless.
Thank you. I just wanted to make sure. I think of myself as pretty smart, and I hear it all the time, and I correct people and things like that, and they say, no. So I figured I'd get a wonderful linguist to, on the air, say, no, it is not an actual term. So thank you so much for that.
Thank you so much for bringing it up, because it's a rogue non-word. It's an illiteracy. It's a combination of the word irrespective and the other word regardless, and so it's a double redundancy. And I just am so glad that you brought it up, because I keep seeing it all the time.
Tiffany,
I see it all the time as well, so I just cringe every time I hear it, so thank you for that. And lastly, I just wanted to ask, as a linguist and someone that's so into language, when you hear news broadcasters or even councilmen and people in higher positions misuse words or terms, how does that make you feel? Do you cringe? Do you laugh? And I'll take your response off air. Thank you.
Thanks, Tiffany.
Well, I cringe and laugh at the same time.
And then she gets out her notebook.
I get out my notebook. And just for this particular show, I started collecting just a few things that I thought might be interesting to read on the air because they are from anchor people. How about this one? Between Charlie and I. Now, that was a national anchor person on a major show we're talking. Another one.
And there's a good rule for that one. If people can't remember, all you have to do is say between me. Is it between I or is it between me?
That's right. That's right. And then there's another one. Lots of people get confused because there is an expression as regards the weather today, we have had some bad snow. There's another expression, in regard to, which is perfectly all right, and with regard to. But you cannot say in regards to or with regards to, as did an anchor person yesterday around noon on a major network. Finally, there's subject-verb agreement seems to be a real problem with some people, especially if they think that they are dealing with a unitary item as opposed to a plural. Here's one which was I heard on the 19th of this month on a major network. And now a look at how 4 years in the Oval Office has changed President Obama. Had the person said, and now look at how his first term in the Oval Office has changed President Obama, it would be fine. It would be unitary. But 4 years, that's a count noun, no matter how you regard it. And finally, this was a meteorologist who said, we haven't hardly had any snow this year. Mm-hmm. And people don't seem to realize that hardly, scarcely, and barely are themselves negatives, and therefore you can't use a negative verb.
There's a variation you hear a lot about that when people say, I could care less, and they really mean to say, I couldn't care less.
That's right.
So we've got a call from Paige from Charlottesville. Go ahead.
Thank you. I've been thoroughly enjoying your show, and I love the woman who brought up graduate.
Yes.
I have two things that really bug me. One is a rather small one, and it is the propensity now for people to use the preposition of with inside when inside is not a verb. When you say inside the house, many people will say inside of the house. If I were talking about the inside of the house, it would be correct, but otherwise it's just inside with no preposition.
Mm-hmm.
The other one that really bugs me is our loss of two classes of words. I think they would be classed as adverbs, but let me give you an example. If I say someone is handsome, I can say someone else is handsomer, and a third person might be handsomest. But nowadays, what you'll hear is handsome, more handsome, and most handsome, which, although technically grammatically correct, to me just falls like a thud. And I'd love to hear what your guest thinks about that.
Well, as far as your comments about inside versus inside of, they're spot on. And I agree with you on the sound of handsome. Handsomer, handsomest, most handsome, more handsome, depending on what the overall context of the sentence is.
That's great. David from Crozet, go ahead with your question or comment.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. When I went to high school, I had a senior class high school teacher who was horrified by using the word enthuse or enthusiastic, using it as a verb to enthuse over something. And she said there is no such word, and for the last 50 years I've been horrified by everybody using it to enthuse. She she said it isn't such a word, and I took her at her word on that.
She's right,
but,
right?
But the really bad use, I think, is okay, is modifying the word unique, most unique, really unique, certainly unique, and unique doesn't take a modifier. It stands on its own, but most people seem to like to qualify it.
Great. David, thank you so much. And thank goodness for our teachers who are teaching us things that stay with us for a lifetime.
Right.
I would like to comment on unique first. You're absolutely right. It's unique, and that's it. There is no comparative or superlative for that. As far as enthuse is concerned, it's long been stigmatized. However, it is what we call a back formation from enthusiasm, just as diagnose comes from diagnosis and edit is another one. But I would never use enthuse because it's been inculcated into me that it's not necessarily a non-word, but it's one that really is on the second or third tier of the snob scale.
Real quickly, Mary from Charlottesville, we've just got a few seconds, but go ahead with your question or comment.
All right. Here are three issues that I have tolerated for many years in general conversation, but they now have been raised to the level of TV commercials. The first is the difference between less and fewer.
Good.
The second between good-paying jobs and well-paying jobs.
Another good one.
And the third is the difference between lie and lay.
All right.
All three have been misused recently on TV
Mary,
commercials.
Thank you for those gems. Do you want to handle that in 15 seconds?
After the break.
Sounds great. You're listening to Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio. We're talking with Ann Sukhanoff. She is a world-renowned lexicographer and has edited many dictionaries. We're so delighted to have her expertise today. This reminder that past editions of Virginia Conversations can be heard at virginiapublicradio.org. That's right. That was a good call, it turns out. You're going to do it after the break.
Sure.
So when we are back, we will have more with Anne. Stay with us.
Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, supporting public discourse through sponsorship of Virginia Public Radio. Resources for parents and teachers online at veanea.org. More information about Virginia Conversations and other Virginia Public Radio programming can be found online at virginiapublicradio.org. This is Virginia Public Radio.
You're listening to Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio. Today, it's the best and worst words of 2012, as well as some words that we're discussing from our listeners with our guest, Ann Sukhanoff. The time just snuck up, didn't it?
Yes, unfortunately, people actually believe now that the word snuck is a base form, and they are trying to create a past tense for it.
Can you quickly go over Mary's pet peeves? She had three good ones.
She had wonderful ones. Less and lesser you use when you do not have a count noun. Few and fewer you use if you have a count noun following. Here is a good example again from the media. This is a situation that leads to less crimes. Completely wrong. The person should have said fewer crimes because crimes is a count noun in the plural. If the person had said a situation that leads to less criminality, it would have been okay because that is not a count noun. And as far as good-paying jobs versus well-paying jobs, that's an excellent example that really, really is bothers me, too. Well is an adverb, and it is modifying a gerund, which is paying, and of course it's become an adjective in a unit, but it's still well-paying versus good-paying. And as far as lie and lay are concerned, my recommendation to everybody is to check your dictionary and make sure that you're saying these words correctly, because they are confusing, and all good dictionaries should have usage notes explaining exactly how you use them. And if you have to tattoo the usage note on your hand, go right ahead and do it.
Roger from Salem, go ahead with your question or comment.
Yes, good morning. I'd like your guest comment.
You should see Anne's body, by the way. She is tattooed head to foot.
Your guest comments on the use of disrespect as a verb, and the new word predeceased, which you've seen a lot of OGUPs now.
All right, thanks,
Roger. I'll take it off the air. Thanks.
Great.
Okay, disrespect. I just saw a commercial yesterday where a person was advertising a program to deal with recalcitrant children. Does your child disrespect you? And I kept thinking, well, why doesn't she just say dis? Because that's what the pop singers and rap singers extrapolated from that street vernacular verb disrespect. But it's moved into the parlance, and we would probably stigmatize that and say that it was informal or slang. Now, you said predecease.
Yes, substituting for preceded in death.
Oh, preceded in death.
Predeceased is the word now.
Oh, okay. That one I'm actually not that familiar with, so I'm going to make a note of it and keep it on my watch list. And I'm glad you brought that one up.
Great. Thanks so much, Roger. Eric from Floyd, what is your question or comment?
Two things. One is I've been fighting against on accident for a long time, correcting kids, saying it's on purpose or by accident. But now I've started seeing on accident, like in news blogs by ostensible adults. So I guess that's the way the language is shifting, and at some point I should quit fighting it. And the other thing, I've noticed kids thinking that versus is a verb, like we're versing Pulaski next Friday, meaning we are going to play them in a game. They don't understand that it versus is U.S. instead of E.S., Latin word. They think it's a verb that they're going to do.
Oh, that's marvelous. I was unfamiliar with that one. That reminds me of the question, would you like to have the au jus today? The A-U-J-U-S, which, of course, in French is not a noun. I'm going to keep keep track of versing, because I've never heard it before.
I asked around on a Usenet group that I hang out on, and other people said, oh yeah, they heard that from their kids the other day or in sports.
Eric wants to give up the fight on accident. I don't think he should.
I don't think so either. That's totally unidiomatic.
No, don't give up, Eric.
Okay.
Keep fighting.
Thank you so much for your call this morning. Doug from Pocahontas County, go ahead.
Yes, there's a usage that I've been hearing quite a lot lately, even from NPR reporters, and that's the use of out of rather than from. This radio station is out of Roanoke.
I don't find that to be problematic at all. It's in my idiom. But I will take a look at it and see what I find later, and I'll keep an eye on it. I'm glad you brought it up.
I find it very annoying, because why use two words when one would work perfectly well?
I agree with that rubric, definitely.
Doug, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Carla from Charlottesville, go ahead.
My question is not so much a grammatical issue, but I have a pet peeve with the phrase in harm's way being used ubiquitously when we're talking about war. It seems to me that it kind of has become this alienating concept that we just say in harm's way, but doesn't really take into account the effect of people being involved.
Yes, I agree with you on that. Insofar as it's one of those words that's just so, or expressions that's so overworked nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not particularly precise. It seems to me that it's a word that's being used because the person can't think of anything else to say. An example of of this as far as an adjective is concerned that's overworked and imprecise is amazing. My amazing grandchildren, my amazing aunt, my amazing store. This word has become a catch-all, meaning nothing anymore, just like awesome has. And so when you brought up In Harm's Way, that sort of triggered my thoughts involving trite, overworked expressions that abound today.
Thank you
so much for your call. Heidi from Virginia Beach, you have one that's on my list.
Yes, it is a real pet peeve of mine, and I hear it on the news all the time. I had a very exacting English teacher in eighth grade who took us to task for the misuse of farther and further. And farther is a unit of measurement, and further is used for an intangible thing. But people are going further into the woods all the time.
We should have you on here with us. I absolutely agree with you, and we have usage notes in good dictionaries explaining just that to air readers.
And farther and further can be paired with less and fewer in that issue of quantity. That is measure. Farther is a measure, just like Anne described earlier about the difference between fewer and less. So that's great, Heidi. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Andy from Roanoke, go ahead.
I hear reporters say the phrase in toto. What are your thoughts on that?
And they haven't just watched The Wizard of Oz?
Exactly.
Yeah, what do you think of that?
It doesn't grate on me at all.
Okay. And then one grammatical question. What is the past tense of the word scoot?
I scoot, he scooted.
Okay, because I used to have a buddy of mine tease me and say, is it Scott?
That's cute.
I like it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Harold, which part of the Commonwealth are you calling, or from which part of the Commonwealth are you calling?
Are you calling Harold?
Yes, I am.
I'm from Salem.
Welcome to the show.
And this is a very exciting discussion.
We think so.
And I was calling about the word close proximity.
I love it.
You've made Anne apoplectic.
Oh, another great redundancy. It's right up there as the Grand Duke of redundancy, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes, that's the way I see it. And there's another word. I would like to give you the definition of the word workaholic. Yes. I give the definition of workaholic as one who drinks alcohol on the job.
That's a great extended sense. I have some redundancies for you, if you'd like to hear them.
Yes.
And et cetera.
Yes.
Derecho storm, because built right into the definition of derecho is the idea of a huge storm. Sierra Nevada mountains. People don't realize that Sierra means mountains. Rio Grande River. Rio means river, so you don't need to repeat that.
Yeah.
And the one that I really dislike, aside from reason why and the reason is because, is doctorate degree. Because doctorate is a degree. Doctoral degree is okay, but doctorate degree is a huge redundancy.
Thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
Tom from Portsmouth, go ahead.
One of my pet peeves is use of the word the mispronunciation of realty and realtor.
A lot of people add an A, don't they? Realty or
realtor. And realtor grates my nerves.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's an what we call an overpronunciation.
And I hear it mostly from realtors. That's sad, isn't it?
That is sad.
And one thing, one of your callers was talking about further and farther, and I remember the difference because farther begins with far, relating to distance.
That's a good mnemonic for people. Yes.
Right.
Thank you so much. We appreciate that call, Tom. Sally from Roanoke, go ahead.
Yes, the use of the phrase "no problem" in response to "thank you."
That's an established informal phrase. Probably we wouldn't want to use it in a, you know, informal writing, but in informal contexts and in spoken context, it's perfectly okay.
Am I the only one in the room who feels this? Is there an urge to physically strike out when someone says, "No worries"? Is that a, that's a peeve of mine. I just don't care for it.
I don't care for it either, but it doesn't grate on me as much as some of the other things that we've been talking about. Jessica, I have to pick and choose my battles.
Yes,
you know?
Yes. Jessica from Lynchburg, go ahead.
I have a neighbor who says this a lot, and I'd heard it years ago, but it's misusing the words "when" and "whenever." For instance, yesterday, whenever I went to the store, I got milk.
That's a good one.
Okay, good. A lot of people haven't noticed that, but I hear it all the time. It's very grating.
I'm glad that you brought it up because I'm going to put it on my list.
Oh, thank
which is
you.
Getting bigger by the minute, by the way.
Because it's my understanding that whenever is kind of an unknown, and when would define that you did go to the store. When you went to the store yesterday, you purchased milk.
Exactly.
Okay. And then the other one, and I'm wondering if it's more of a colloquialism or a generational thing. I heard it a lot in Canada, not to diss Canadians, but to use one of those earlier words. But it's "these ones" and "those ones," and I hear it on TV all the time.
Yes, I've heard that in Canada, also in Great Britain, and I've heard it in certain parts of Southwest Virginia, and I don't have a problem with it as long as the numbers agree.
These so you ones, see it as a colloquialism?
I see it more
or
as a world Englishism as far as the Canadians and the Brits are concerned, and as a regionalism down here in these parts.
Okay, because when I hear teenagers say it, I think, can't you just say "these" and "those" and leave the ones off?
Yeah, I kind of agree with the gentleman who called earlier that if you can say it with one word rather than two or three, it's better.
Right. Okay, great.
Thank you, Jessica.
Well, thank you so much. This has been fun.
Now I'd like to play a little speed word with you. I have some of these words left on my list. Callers took some of them, which is great. And I'd just like to go through either the word or the phrase with you. Okay. And if I stop, it's because I'm stuck. If I don't stop, it's because it's evident which is the correct one. I'd like to start with heart-rending versus heart-rendering.
Yeah, it's heart-rending.
Yeah, you rend your heart. Here's another one, anxious versus eager. People say, hey, I can't wait to see you. I'm anxious to see you. No, you're not. You're eager to see me.
Technically, you're correct on that, but anxious has actually moved up to the point where it's almost an equal variant of choice.
Wow, because we're more neurotic now.
Yes.
Garnishy your wage. You don't garnish a wage, you garnishy a wage.
Correct.
Different than, different from.
Should be different from, but different than is coming up very close behind, almost by a nose. I heard Hillary Clinton say it in her testimony not long ago or in an interview afterwards.
Quality versus high quality. That's a quality item you have.
Fine in commercial English, but not so informal.
Here's one that's self-evident. Could have. Could O-F. Could have. We hear that a lot.
Woulda, coulda, shoulda. Forget it. Forget about it.
Continual versus continuous.
Yeah, two different meanings. And you need to be sure that you understand each one. Continuous and continual are constantly being confused.
Since and because. I took a leave of absence since. I took a leave of absence because.
Yeah, it depends on the context on that one.
A lot of people misstate this one, surmised. That's correct, but some people say, I surmised.
Yeah.
I appreciate you taking the time versus I appreciate your taking the time.
Should be your taking the time with the gerund.
Is it wrong to say I appreciate you taking the time?
Not exactly, but I have always been taught and I prefer the your.
Homing in versus honing.
Two different meanings, often confused. Be careful.
Twinge of guilt versus a tinge or a shade of color of guilt.
Twinge, definitely. I'm twinging.
Acronym versus anachronism.
Oh, yes. Two totally different words.
Okay. That sound meant that is the end of the program. In fact, we would have loved to have had those sound effects during the show so that when it was the wrong use of the word, we could hear that boom. You're listening to Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio. Our guest, Anne Sukhanov, and such a pleasure to have her with us. And even just as much a pleasure to hear all of your calls. I love the indignant calls, especially. Thank you so much for taking time for your words and just going over some things that are so important to us and helping us to preserve the English language.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Join us again next Friday at 9. We'll check in on the progress being made in this year's session of the General Assembly. That's next, Virginia Conversations. Until then, I'm Aileen Lee. So long.
Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, the men and women working in Virginia's public schools. VEA, teaching, learning, leading. Online at veanea.org. And by listeners of this Virginia Public Radio member station. Listeners can hear this program again or access other Virginia Public Radio news content at virginiapublicradio.org. This is Virginia Public Radio.